It's Classroom Technology Tuesday on Wells Tech. Interactive smart boards are the topic of the day, and Jason Schmidt is going to join us to talk about those from Omaha, Nebraska. And you know those little links that you click on all the time, those hyperlinks? They're cool again because we've got some tools that'll make them a lot easier to work with. All that and more. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. This is episode 314 for Tuesday, November 5th, 2013. And this is Education Tuesday, Classroom Technology Tuesday. And helping me celebrate is Sally Draper. Sally, you're a little in the dark today.
I am on the dark side because I crossed over to a Mac computer, so maybe that's what caused me. That's what my boys tell me anyway. You've gone to the dark side, Mom.
Are you on the Windows side of the Mac or the Mac side of the Mac?
I am on the Windows side.
Maybe that's the whole problem.
We'll give it a try next time from the Mac.
Mac side. Does not like that.
Apparently.
And Sally, you and I are now a state apart again, so that's kind of sad. We enjoyed having you in the offices last week, but now you're in the comfy confines of the Draper estate.
That's right. We're hoping that the comfy confines is a quiet place, because this is time to get the boys out to school. We're broadcasting early this morning.
Yep, we are. So. And we are doing that to accommodate our very special guest, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent from Omaha, Nebraska, Jason Schmidt. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am just peachy.
It's good to spend a little time with you. Four weekends ago, you made the journey up to New Ulm for our UnConference. It was good to see you there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a blast. I really appreciated the opportunity to be a part of that. It was a lot of fun.
You got to meet the family, and hopefully you guys had a good time in New Ulm.
Oh, we had a great time, yeah. And, you know, New Ulm is always it's always fun coming to New Ulm.
Yeah. I think one of the highlights, I don't know about you guys, but I felt one of the highlights of that UnConference was the vendor that we had in. And that was the guys from Mimio, and that's a kind of a smart board alternative, which is our little segue into the topic for the day. I know when we talk about classroom technology, perhaps the centerpiece these days, maybe you'd call it, is that screen at the front of the room and what you can do with it.
That's right. More and more classrooms are going with interactive whiteboards, and using the interactive whiteboard to engage the students in the lesson, give them manipulatives to work with on the board, so it's not just a flat projection, but something that the students can actually make use of, interact with, and learn from.
And Jason, you're a veteran of the classroom and these interactive tools, and probably the most used, most known, you know, when you're talking about interactive whiteboards is kind of like the Kleenex of interactive whiteboards, yep. And that's the smart board. Everybody says, well, do you have a smart board? And smart is really a brand, capital S-M-A-R-T. And what we're talking about today is all the other things other than smart boards, because there are some choices out there. And Jason, you are very familiar with one in particular, and that's the Mimio stuff, right?
Yeah. Over the past, I don't know, a decade or so, the interactive whiteboard market has really kind of grown to go beyond just the smart board. The reason they're the Kleenex is they're the ones that started it. You know, it was 1993 they came out with their first smart board, and attached with a serial cable, and you had to have a power brick and all this other stuff. You know, it was really quite the deal to get one of those up and running. But you know, since then, I'm very involved with Mimio. I do some training for them, and my school district, you know, we have, I don't know, I want to say we've got over 100 of these throughout the district. We've got over 100 different machines that do this kind of a thing, and you know, it's really it's really an interesting platform and an interesting software and really innovative hardware, the way that they put everything together. The biggest
What made you kind of think of all smart board alternatives when you're considering interactive whiteboards? Was it the cost? Was it the setups of the classroom? Was it just the innovation of this particular vendor?
There were two main factors in the decision to go with Mimio as opposed to a smart board. Probably the biggest one was cost. Based on educator pricing for Mimio, those are $800 a piece, whereas a smart board is going to be closer to $2,400. Mm-hmm. So when you think of it as that's really for the cost of one smart board, we could get three Mimios. That's a really big factor in that decision. The other thing that was a really big factor was we didn't want to be tied into something that couldn't easily be moved or relocated or repositioned or something like that. Our classrooms are constantly being rearranged and remodeled, and to mount a smart board, you have to put anchors into the wall. You've got plastic washers, and if you forget one little part of it, then that messes up the whole installation. And installation of a smart board takes, you know, someone who's really good at it, it's still going to take them the better part of an hour to put everything up. With a Mimio, it's just magnetic. It sticks right on the whiteboard, you know, and then we project onto the whiteboard, and teachers have the flexibility of using different ways of presenting their material. They don't lose their whiteboard and their markers because they, you know, a lot of teachers still like to use that. And then they just have that flexibility. When they don't want to use their Mimio, they can just take it down. Or if they want to move it to another room, they can move it to another room. So, for us anyways, it was the combination of price and flexibility to make that change.
We should probably talk a little bit about the technology that drives these things that make them work. And there's a couple different approaches or different technologies involved with SMART. The touch-sensitive nature of the material is what allows somebody to interact with the board, even though an image is shining on the board. Really, it's the where that finger is placed or where that marker is placed or eraser is placed that determines what happens. And that's, I think, why you probably see a higher cost for a smart board. With, let's say, a Mimio or some of these other products, it's really more like a scanner. It's constantly monitoring a surface, so it's a camera that's mounted in a device, and once you calibrate, and you have to calibrate all of these things, once you calibrate what it's supposed to be looking for, where's the top left, where's the top right corner, bottom left, bottom right corner, it's constantly looking at what's going on that surface. And that's one of the advantages of Mimio is you don't need that. You can put it on anything. You could put it on a wall, a whiteboard, any surface that's fairly flat, and still have it work.
You know, one thing about smart boards being kind of the industry standard per se is the software that they developed around smart boards. So you get not just the smart board, but the access to smart notebook software, which if you haven't interacted with smart notebook before, it's somewhat like a PowerPoint kind of feel. You have different pages that you can put content on and then share those with your students through the projection system. And on those pages, you can add text and images, you can embed video, you can have students write on the screen, or you can put handwritten things. But then SMART also gives you a huge arsenal of basically kind of flash-based activities and interactive resources that you can use on your board. So they provide a whole lot of clip art. They provide a lot of interactives, like if you're studying musical instruments, you can drag a drum on the screen and it'll play the sounds of a drum and things like that. So you don't have to go and create the wheel with the smart notebook software. So the challenge then becomes, if you're going with an alternative, what kind of resources can you find? Because obviously you're not going to have the licensed smart notebook software to go with an alternative product.
Right. And Jason, you had to struggle with that, I'm sure, or deal with that, maybe not struggle. What's the ecosystem like for these alternatives, especially Mimio?
Well, there? with Mimio in particular, the files and resources and things like that isn't as much of an issue. And any one of these smart board alternatives, you know, we're talking about if you're talking about a Promethean board or a Star board or using an interactive projector or something like that. All of those will have some sort of a software that goes along with it. So it's not necessarily the smart notebook. With Mimio in particular, and I don't know about any of these other ones, the Mimio will import a smart notebook file. So if you have something in smart notebook, you can put it into your Mimio presentation and then make the changes and things like that and work with it on your Mimio board. Without having to worry about compatibility issues and things like that. So that's one of the things with Mimio. And then another thing, you know, when we talk about interactive whiteboards, you got to talk about the communities that go along with them. And you know, Smart has the Smart Exchange. There are literally millions of lessons out there for people to choose from and download and customize. Mimio has something called Mimio Connect. Same kind of concept. Doesn't have millions, but you know, there definitely are tens of thousands of lessons and things and files that you can download from there. You know, and all of these other vendors will have something similar as well. So it's not that there's a lack of files or a lack of art and animations and things like that that you can use with this software. And then kind of along with that, you know, most of these applications will let you, you can customize it. So you have your gallery with content that you use all the time, and that comes with the software, but you can import additional images, you can add sounds, you can have all of these other parts that go along with it and customize it, make it your own, and add to it. So definitely something you're going to, you know, you can add to it and customize and things like that, but then also it kind of helps to pick your pony and ride it, and then just go from there.
Right, and I suppose you have an advantage with an entire school system. You have, you know, some volume there and some sharing that can go on. But you know, as long as, you know, it's not a very niche market, I think, you know, whatever ecosystem you're involved with, there's going to be good stuff. And I guess in my conversations, this is more anecdotal than anything, my conversations with teachers about smart technologies is they kind of build their own lessons anyway. They can kind of pick and choose. They piece things together that map to their either curriculum or their project-based learning approaches, those kinds of things. So I think that's, and all of these will support saving a lesson, sharing it, you know, posting it, those kinds of things.
Yep, that's very true.
Probably worth a mention that there are many, many websites that are interactive as well. So if your students can sit and interact with a website on a computer, they can do that same kind of interaction on your projector.
That are probably like touch-enabled, right?
Exactly. And so, and many websites are kind of gearing towards interactive whiteboards. For instance, the PBS Kids site, which has a lot of great educational games on it, put together a specific page of games and things by subject area that are great for interactive whiteboards. So you can head over there. We'll have lots of links in the show notes. One that I've used before is called Shepherd Software, and they just have tons of interaction, a lot of flash-based stuff. So you could definitely use these on an interactive whiteboard. There's even a blog. It's called the Whiteboard Blog, so it's not platform specific, but you might want to check out their guides page where they have guides and stuff for all different types of platforms to help you get started. They have a files page where they share files as well. So resources are out there. You don't have to just be dependent on the vendor and the software that the vendor provides.
Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't think about that, and maybe Jason, you're more experienced with that than I am, but I guess maybe I would see that as a trend where these interactive websites are kind of doing the same thing that these proprietary smart board things are doing. There's really nothing probably that they can't do on a today's website that some of these smart notebooks or whatever couldn't do, even to the point of saving lessons and, you know, assets, those kinds of things. So that's an exciting space. I would think that we're going to see a lot of that because it really is vendor neutral. doesn't matter what smart board you're using as long as you can interact with a web page.
Right, and that's one of those things too. You know, you see a lot of demand, especially when we get more of those touch-enabled devices. You know, you get the iPads, you get the Android tablets.
Yeah,
and those
yeah.
A lot of web developers are now kind of moving into that space and making their websites more friendly for those kinds of things, and that also, by extension, then makes them a lot more fun to use with an interactive whiteboard.
Yeah, I bet your textbook publishers are all over that too, as they're creating materials that are interactive whiteboard friendly. So cool.
They're trying. Yeah.
Yep. So we're going to have to move along. We've got a bunch of resources that we didn't get a chance to talk about, but rest assured they will be in the show notes. So if you are a smart board user or a Mimio board user or a Promethean or Hitachi or whatever, we have links here for you to explore, and it's probably worth a quick look to expand your learning a little bit. We're going to jump to the interview with Tim Franke, who is a sales director for Mimio. And we got cut off with Tim mid-interview, but I think he got some really good information out to us, and we wanted to play that for you subsequent to this. So just give you a little bit more specific information about the products that Mimio offers. And then when we come back, we're going to jump to Jason's tip and pick of the week, since he has to run. Happy to have with us today Tim Franke from Mimio. Thank you for joining us, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Tim, you are located in somewhere in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I'm located in Elk River, Minnesota, just north of the Minneapolis metro area.
Very good, very good. And we got a chance to meet at our WellsTech Unconference a month or so ago. Very great of you guys to join us and do kind of a full showcase of all the Mimio products. What do you do for Mimio?
I'm the territory manager for North Central United States, so I cover a 8-state region, and I work specifically with partners or our resellers and help them with opportunities, conferences, any kind of issues they may need support with. That's my role with Mimio.
For those of our listeners who weren't fortunate enough to attend WellsTech Camp and play in your playground, maybe we should start with just having you explain a little bit about the Mimio product line. Specifically, we're excited about the Teach Bar and learning more about it.
Okay. Yeah, so Mimio has a full set of interactive products. Our flag product is the Mimio Teach Bar, which is a device that mounts to any smooth surface, typically a interactive whiteboard, or I'm sorry, not interactive whiteboard, but a whiteboard. It has a couple magnets built into it, and you can simply just mount the Teach Bar to the board, calibrate your projection area, and turn that white surface into an interactive white surface. One of the major benefits of it is extremely portable. It literally would take me a minute to install the product. I'm not subject to the size of the board. It will actually scan a full 8-foot whiteboard, so my interactive board can be adjustable based on my needs. And it's very cost effective. So for the cost of $799, you have an interactive whiteboard up to 8 feet in size. We also have interactive projectors, ultra short throw interactive projector that we offer, interactive white pads. We have voting systems, so student response pads, document cameras. We offer the full suite. One of the bigger products, or the most interesting new products that we offer, is what we call Mimio Mobile. And Mobile works with, it's an application that can be installed on both iPad devices, iPhones, iPods, and Android devices. And we can take that application and push the Mimio Studio lessons out to each individual student. The teacher can actually walk around the room and have visual of what's happening on their interactive whiteboard and push that activity to individual students, or take an activity and push it out to 9 students to work in a collaborative type of environment. And we also have the ability to turn those devices into student response pads. So it really takes place, kind of what the iPad and the Android devices do, becomes a multi-use device. Really kind of takes place of a few of our hardware products if you already have those types of teaching tablets in your classroom.
Tim, tell us, the interactive whiteboard space is pretty crowded at this point. Everybody is kind of doing their own thing. Sometimes the differentiator, at least in my mind, is the software. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're trying to do with the software and how that helps an educator use the board or use the technology better.
Yeah, exactly. Mimio has Mimio Notebook Studio. It's the software that ties all of our products together. All the products will work seamlessly with that individual software. I think what you'll find with our software, it's very intuitive from a teacher standpoint to get them up and going using the software. It's a quick turnaround. We also have the ability to use or to insert smart files, Promethean files, PowerPoint, Word documents into our Mimio Notebook software, so teachers don't have to reinvent the wheel if a school has started down the path of using Smart Notebook or Promethean Flipchart, or, you know, they've created a lot of PowerPoints and they want to be able to continue using that content that they've already created without having to reinvent it again. We can simply insert those files into our software and be able to use them. We have a toolbar with the same type of functionality that you'll find in all the competitors' products, with pens and screen clippings and erasers and highlighter tools. And we have a gallery with thousands of preloaded images, templates, flash activities. One thing we also have is something called Mimio Connect. And Mimio Connect is a website that's available for teachers. There is no cost to create a username and password. And within there, you have the ability to search lessons and additional content for your gallery based on state standards, based on grade level, based on subject area. These are all free downloads, and when they download them, if a teacher wants to modify them, they certainly can modify it to fit their curriculum better. But it's a great starting place, and there's a lot of content available out there at Mimio Connect.
Our thanks to Tim for taking that time with us. It seems like a company on the rise, because their innovation is pretty clear that there are products here that meet needs. So it was good for Tim to join us. And Jason, you know Tim from just working with the product in your school district, right?
Yep. Yeah. Tim's a good guy. He's not our rep, right. But he's close
and
enough to being
good
our
enough
rep
to come to New Ulm for us and do some demos for us. So.
Yep. Yeah.
Let's move on, and then we'll come back and do our ministry resources, of which we have one. But before Jason runs, we want to make sure we give him a chance to give a tip and a pick of the week. Jason, what's your tip of the week?
Well, my tip of the week is I want to talk about hyperlinking. You know, we're very familiar with hyperlinks and how they work in the internet and things like that. But a lot of the interactive whiteboard software that we use also gives you the capability to hyperlink. So when you're putting a file together, when you've got a lesson built and working on it, adding hyperlinks can really add a lot to it. Sometimes for younger students, it'll make it easier to navigate. You can use a hyperlink to move to a different page in your document or something like that. With a smart board, it can be a lot of fun to throw things at your smart board because they they're built for that kind of thing. They can take that abuse. So, you know, if you hyperlink objects and students throw something at the board and that makes them go to a different page, you know, those are always a lot of fun. I like to use a dart gun on a Mimeo board. So, you know, you can kind of shoot the target from there and then see how that whole thing goes. So lots of really fun things that you can do with hyperlinking, kind of keep everything together and make your lessons easier to navigate and easier to get around in.
Yeah, you definitely want to have as seamless an experience as possible as you're moving around resources and websites to websites. So rather than typing in the URL, even having bookmarks, you know, in a, you know, drop down or whatever, just having those hyperlinks there is probably a big time saver.
Yes.
Good.
Very, very much so.
Nice tip. What is your pick of the week, Jason?
My pick of the week. Let me do my screen share here. My pick of the week is a free website called extramath.org. So what this does is, if you've ever heard of something like Fast Math or something like that, where you have you're working on math fact fluency for students, ExtraMath is a free solution for doing something like that. So you sign up as a teacher, you set up your class, kids get a code that they need to put in. Everything is completely, you know, you set up their accounts for them. They don't have to set up their own. You give them passwords and an enrollment key and things like that, and then they get in there. It keeps track of how quickly they're completing their math facts, how well they've mastered everything, and it's, like I said, completely free. So this is one of those things, you know, we're in my district, we're really working on math, and that's one of the that's our content area that we're kind of focusing on, and this is a nice low cost solution for working on getting kids to master those basic math facts. So it works really well in a center. It can be in a homework assignment or something like that, get parents involved. So really great service and something I would definitely recommend people check out.
So this is something like Khan Academy, because I know it does some of that kind of thing where it tracks progress, those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's not so much. Khan Academy is more... more is talking about like the instruction, like teaching kids how to do things. That's not necessarily what this is. This is just math facts. So
okay,
you know, it's electronic it's electronic flashcards. It's basically what it is.
Okay, so it's no lesson. It's just a kind of a self-assessment tool.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, it keeps track of everything for you. Teachers get a report, you know, and it's got a big grid on there that shows, you know, all of the addition facts from 0 + 0 to 10 + 10 or whatever. And then, you know, as kids master them, it kind of blocks them out. And, you know, they get the green ones are really good, and then the red ones are okay. You got to work on these a little bit more. So, you know, they've done a really good job putting it together, making it really easy for teachers to set up and use, and also for kids to navigate and use it.
Cool. What grade levels does it support?
Well, it's just math facts. So honestly, I have teachers using it in first grade, and I have teachers using it in sixth grade. So, you know, it's once again, you know, if you talk about Common Core or things like that, one of those things that they want is that procedural fluency. So, you know, you know your math facts. You know right away. 20, you know, 5 + 5 × 5 = 25, and you just got that. And you know that's what this is building towards. Cool. Is just that math fact fluency.
Very good. And that's extra math, and drop the E, of course, in extra.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thanks, Jason, for being with us. Appreciate your time. I know you got to run, but always good to have you. And until we see you again, thanks. Blessings.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks, Sally.
All right. Now we can backtrack a little, Sally. We skipped over, in order to get Jason tucked in here, ministry resources, and you came across something that we're sharing this week.
Yep. I'm just going to share my screen, make sure that's working for me. This is actually a blog post from Internet Toolbox for Churches, and the title of the blog post is 23 Church Podcast Ideas. And I thought this was some really great ideas that were shared here. You know, most of the time we're probably podcasting sermons, And that's what they started with. You dump the sermon audio into an MP3 file and call it a day, he says. But there are also other things you could do even with the sermon. Record a audio message that introduces the sermon. Just for the podcast listeners, precede or follow the sermon with a brief invitation of some sort. Visit the church, participate in an activity, get the sermon cheat sheet that includes the scripture passages, etc. Or even include a bonus audio section with a hymn related to the sermon, as long as you have appropriate copyright permissions, etc. But going beyond the sermon, this is where the list gets really interesting, Martin. I thought they did a really great job of brainstorming ideas for regular podcasting. You know, on Wells.net, we have a daily devotion that we put out and daily Bible readings and things. Well, they talked about in this article similar things, but then also doing things like a podcast series on controversial topics from a Christian viewpoint, or a pastor Q&A podcast series, or ask the pastor in-depth version, maybe one question per episode and discussed among the elders or just the pastor of the church. Pop cultural reviews. We've seen that with PC's Take that's done
right
by Salty Earth Productions. And
Clark Schultz.
Do similar things. How to explain your faith to others. So Bible class topics, that kind of thing. Scripture explained. Maybe you do, basically an audio version of a walk through the book of John or whatever it may be. I think that there's a lot of potential here, and I don't know that we're tapping these media outlets that this podcast idea sheet gives us. So give it some thought if you're looking for a way to get into the digital outreach landscape. Perhaps this blog post will help you.
Yep. Two things strike me. One, that it's a lot of work, and I think we've said that all along, that to produce quality stuff it takes some quality time. But two, if you want to do this, there's no shortage of topics. You know, some people would think, well, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to do week after week, or you know, however often you want to do this? And here's 23 great ideas. I think all of them are viable in a ministry setting where you could do any one of them successfully, I think, and would be perfectly viewable, watchable, and shareable too. Not just for your members, but encourage your members to share this stuff. And that's part of, I think that's part of internet evangelism, is producing content that people can share. That's what we're trying to do with the Wells mobile app, you know, make sure that there's always a share button, just the ability to share good stuff. We do that on Wells.net. We hope you do that with the resources here on our show notes page and our podcast. Just makes a lot of sense to do that. And these are all shareable topics that you could share with an unchurched neighbor, friend, whatever. So,
you know, and maybe if your individual congregation or you as a individual pastor don't want to take on the responsibility, maybe it would be a great project for a circuit or a district to share the load, spread
rotate
that responsibility across several pastors.
Yep, you got it. Okay, so let's move back to our tip of the week section. And my tip of the week, let me just do a quick screen.
Always learn great things from you, Martin, so I'm ready.
The bar's high. Set high. My tip of the week is a very simple one. It's all about saving your battery. Now, many of us use portable computing devices. So we have laptops. If we're an educator, we're taking that laptop into the room, and we may not always be plugged into a power source, so we want to make sure that we have enough battery to deal with the tasks at hand, or maybe we're in a meeting, or maybe we're at a conference, whatever. The biggest thing that you can do to conserve battery life is to adjust your monitor's brightness, your screen's brightness. And fortunately, a lot of the software today, certainly Windows and the Mac software, allows you to really fine-tune that to get it to a point where it's going to work for you and save that battery. Now, you always have brightness controls. Usually it's a keyboard command, maybe a function command that's on your keyboard, where you can lighten the screen or darken the screen. Obviously, the darker the screen, the better for battery life. So if you're in a setting where you can live with something that's a little bit dimmer, that would be good. One thing sometimes fighting against you is something called adaptive brightness. Windows has that, and it works with the hardware on your computer to sense how light or dark your room environment is. So if it's a very dark room, it'll actually lower the brightness of the screen. If it's a very bright room, it'll bump it up so that it's more visible. But sometimes it doesn't get it right, and you have unnecessary brightness going on, and that's sucking your battery down. So I'll put a link in the show notes that at least is directions for Windows 7, which I know a lot of you use. Windows 8, it's pretty much the same. Where if you're just clicking on the little battery icon, you have something called Power Saver, and in that Power Saver, you usually have a link to adaptive brightness. Otherwise, you can just search for it in your operating system and probably come up with the settings for it. But you may want to either turn it on or off. Sometimes there's a setting that says on battery or plugged in. So obviously that will take it to the appropriate level when you are in those certain circumstances. If you're plugged in, it really doesn't matter. Just, you know, whatever the brightness is going to work for you. But if you're on battery, that's the time where you really care about it. So if you're concerned about battery life and you have an operating system and a computer, a laptop computer that allows for adaptive brightness or just adjusting it in general, just tap that down a little bit and you'll find that your battery life will go up. And it's probably the biggest battery drain on a laptop battery at this point. So that's my tip of the week.
Well, I have a companion tip to go along with that. Just cool. Something I learned from my smart husband, who I remember his days at seminary and trying to make his battery last through the 4 or 5 hours of morning classes. He would always have a black background on his screen.
Yep.
And I thought that was really depressing, but he said it's all about the screen brightness, it's all about the battery life. So if you have a really bright background, which I'm looking at my screen and it's very light colored right now, I think I wouldn't do well in the whole save your battery space. So yeah, set your background to something that's not too bright as well.
Yeah, your LEDs are really on and off kind of devices, and in the off state they're dark, and in the on state they're bright. And the way your monitor works is it picks things in between to represent colors. And so a dark background would indeed not stress those LEDs and also or LCDs, and would also enable some power savings or battery savings as a result. So, yeah, good advice. Thank you.
Right.
Thank Kevin for us.
Yeah, there you go. My turn for tip of the week, and this kind of goes along with our discussion topic we had earlier with Jason, that interactive whiteboard discussion, and I just was going to share something I've done with students in the past that turned out to be a blessing. I didn't realize it when I started doing it, but I would call it an interactive whiteboard school year scrapbook. I know that many teachers, especially at the lower elementary level or preschool level, even kindergarten, they start their days with like a daily look at the weather and, you know, historic events on that day and, you know, kind of a morning circle sign in, that kind of thing. Well, I would start classes with upper elementary students with a similar thing, but using the whiteboard. So I would use the whiteboard. Maybe on the first day of school, I'd take a picture of the class, put it up on the whiteboard and have them all sign their name on their picture. You have to keep them from being too silly and writing over people's faces and things like that. But it's kind of a reference point for the school year. Here we are at the beginning of the school year. And then throughout the school year, use the board maybe to do some interactive things that wouldn't necessarily come up in your regular lessons. For instance, Venn diagrams. Maybe that's a concept you want to teach them, overlaying circles, and you could be in this circle or that circle, or you could be at the intersection of the two if you like both things. Well, you could have them vote on their favorite musical instruments, for instance, whatever their favorite thing is that you're studying, the favorite book you've read this quarter or whatever, by dragging their name or writing their name in a particular area of the Venn diagram. And so, you know, they're learning new concepts, maybe things that wouldn't necessarily get introduced in your regular class period. They're interacting with the whiteboard, so they're getting more comfortable with it. And, you know, you're kind of making a path throughout the school year. You're building some history as you work with this one file to do these interactive activities. Another one I did in the past was a random letter generator. You can find those on interactive websites and in your software as well. And I would have them pick a letter randomly and then write a Bible word associated with that letter. You know, so we're doing some, you know, creative activities, but we're also interacting with the whiteboard. Some days we would just do silly things, things that we wouldn't necessarily get to do on the whiteboard otherwise, like use a special pen. Everybody wants to use the rainbow pen, but that doesn't come up in normal class activities, and so giving them that opportunity and stuff. And by the end of the year, if you take an end of year school picture, you can kind of take a walk through, down memory lane using this particular interactive whiteboard file. So I found that to be a positive thing. It gives you a little bit of exposure outside the normal classroom work to some of the more advanced capabilities of the boards. And it also, you know, gives you a little bit of a scrapbook, basically, of what's happened throughout the school year. So that's my tip of the week.
That's neat, and that makes a lot of sense. So you kind of build a virtual or digital scrapbook for each class, mm-hmm. and it's something for neat for the teacher to look back on and share, but also for the kids as well. So
they do enjoy it.
Cool.
Yep.
Sally, you're up for pick of the week now.
All right, let me see if I can share my screen. I came across a new website I wanted to share with everyone. It's kind of like Netflix for books, basically. The web address is Oyster Books, and it's basically a flat rate, $9.95 a month, to get access to unlimited books on your mobile device. They have a huge selection. You can start with a free month to try it out. They have over 100,000 books, and it's only iOS-centric at this point, so it's for iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, and basically you can read to your heart's desire. The world is your oyster. That's the concept behind the title. So I did a little looking. They have books, you know, categorized in different genres. So, you know, if you're into a particular type of reading, you can find all different genres here. Fiction and literature, history, mystery and thriller. They have business books. They have a lot of technology and science books. That was probably what whetted my appetite the most, was all kinds of different technology and science books available. But I think you'd find a good amount of reading to satisfy your needs in all different categories. Martin, I've been reading more and more of The Shallows. That's our book selection this year on Wells Tech, and it's just convinced me that I need to be doing more focused, deep reading to keep those brain circuits active and the concentration level there. So if that's what your goal is, perhaps oysterbooks.com is the place for you.
Cool. I checked this out a couple weeks ago, too, when it kind of launched, and downloaded it and did some searching. It's a very cool interface, works well, and I think it's priced right. It's like having a library. You know, you pay for a library card, but you get access to any book you want anytime you want, at least any book they have in the library. There were a few books that I was disappointed that were not there. For instance, The Shallows is not a book in the library. So I think they're growing the library is what they're saying. Just like Netflix doesn't have every movie ever made. So if there's a particular suite of books or genre of books that appeals to you, you may want to check it out. And it doesn't cost you anything to check it out for a month. Or you can even just go to the website and do some searches on the books that maybe you're interested in reading and see if they're there, see if this is worthwhile. So it wouldn't take long if you're especially a big reader to pay for itself. Rather than purchasing, you know, these hardcover or paperback books. I know they have some bestsellers on there, so it's an interesting concept. I hope they make it.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right, my pick of the week is something that we talk about all the time. And Sally, I was really surprised when I searched through our Wells Tech archives to see if we've ever picked this pick. And much to my surprise and delight, we haven't. And that's bit.ly, bit.ly. Bit.ly is a URL shortening website. and it works in all kinds of different ways. But anytime you have a big, long, ugly URL that you want to make a little bit more memorable, Bitly's the tool to use. And it's pretty easy. You don't actually have to create an account, although it's sometimes helpful if you do. And it's free, so there's no charge. But basically, it takes these big, long, ugly URLs and puts them into something a little bit smaller, a little bit more memorable. And I think the use case for these is especially if you're printing URLs. Obviously, with the web, it doesn't really matter about their length or how pretty they are as long as somebody can click on them. But what if somebody has to type it in? And that's where Bitly comes in real handy. If you have to put it down on a piece of paper, put it in a bulletin, put it in a school newsletter, whatever that's not in a digital format, Bitly is the way to go. And there are other URL shorteners. Google has their own, but Bitly's been around probably the longest at this point. And so if you go to bit.ly, bit.ly.com, or bit.ly.com now, or I'm sorry, bit.ly, or bit.ly.com, either one will get you to the same place. You have a link at the top, or an area at the top where it says paste a link here. So you're just copying whatever hyperlink it is you want to shorten. You plug it in there, and then it creates a smaller URL. So if I went to, let's say, wells.net, I'm going to grab the URL, and I go back to Bitly. I paste it in there, which I'm sure wells.net has been pasted before. Then it says, I mean, it gives you the name of the site, so it's smart enough to go out and look for it. You can actually change it, change the site name, so how it would appear in your Bitly, what they call bitmarks, your links, whether to make it public or not, so it can be just for you. You can also add it to a bundle, so these are collections of links. You can add a little note to it, so if you're collecting a bundle and you want to share this, somebody can see notes that you've written. And then also ultimately you can copy, email, or share it. So that's all there is to it.
Before you click off of there, you can also customize it, right?
That's right. And that little pencil icon here,
right,
customize this Bitly link, will allow me to make any kind of available name out there. So if I clicked, if I typed in Wells, I doubt that would be available. So let's see. Sorry, it says that's taken, which would make sense. But if I typed in maybe wells.net, let's see if that works. No, you can't put a dot in there. So let's say wells.net. There we go. So now it's bit.ly/wells.net, dotnet. And now if I come back to my bitmarks, it's going to show me that I've created this link. And if I were to click on it, it would go to, of course, wells.net. You can sort these by number of clicks on your links and so on and so forth. There are reports or stats that you can look at. So if you care about how many people clicked on a link, I always do this for any workshops that I do. So right now I try and never leave handouts behind. I prefer to do it all online, and I just want to give them one quick link to either my my Digo list or a resource page or something like that. I'll always create a Bitly link that's really easy to remember. So, you know, I did one for a state teachers conference. It was bit.ly/WLSTC2013 or something like that, something that they could easily write down, you know, at the beginning of my presentation. This works well for church bulletins if you want members to dive into a portion of your site. Now, if you use Final Web, you can actually do this with the Final Web software, but a lot of software you can't create these shortened links. So, and this also allows tracking, so how many people clicked on a certain link. You can get that easily from the stats here, and just do any kind of tracking that you want. And they stay there permanently, or as long as Bitly's going to be in business, which has been, I don't know, 5-6 years now, Sally, maybe even longer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really stable platform and very simple to use. So that's my pick of the week.
Well, I'm impressed, Martin. I can't believe we've never picked that, and so kudos to you for for sharing Bitly. I'm a huge Bitly fan. I just recently did a presentation at Martin Luther College about just different Google applications, and I shared the Google URL shortener, which is at goo.gl.
Yep.
And what's neat about it is it works with your Google account, but it's right. very similar, and just that ability to have demographics or, you know, data on the clicks is really powerful and so beneficial in many ways.
Yep. Very good. Sally, should we move along to our promo section? We have a very special service coming up.
That's right. Mark your calendars for November 17th when the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary will be celebrating their 150th anniversary. Wow, that's really impressive. They're going to have President Mark Schrader preach and Commission on Worship Administrator Brian Gearlock be the guest organist, and presidents from all the different schools are going to be there. The seminary chorus will be joined by choirs from MLC, MLS, and Luther Prep. So a special service indeed. They're actually doing it twice at 3 and 7 p.m. So if you're anywhere near Mequon, you should really make the effort to be there and celebrate with the seminary this special event. But if you can't be there in person, it will be streamed. Thanks to our friends in the technology office there at the CMM, it will be streamed at the 3 p.m. service. So tune in 3 p.m. Central Time. You can find the link on the Wells.net website or on the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website and join the stream.
Very good. I will be there doing that streaming along with Debbie Kumin, and we're looking forward to it. That's going to be quite an event with all those choirs together and a very special time there.
Definitely.
So tune in. Go to wells.net to find that. All right. Let's move along to our community feedback section. Some familiar faces in here.
Yep. And wish me luck with it, because right now I'm not sure I have all the links up that I need to have up. I'll have some challenges. We'll see how it goes. We're going to start with a link from Pastor Rob Gunther, who's our friend up in Kenai, Alaska, and I'm really having some challenges. Give me just a moment to get the right thing up on the screen. The first link that he shared with us is something called Actions, which is actually an iPad app, and basically you can use the iPad app to control remotely your PC or your Mac. So you build into your iPad app whatever commands you want to use. So whatever the common commands are, opening things, advancing screens, making something a favorite, whatever it may be, you can actually do that remote control using the Actions iPad app. I haven't tried it out. Sounds like an interesting concept, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
And also from Pastor Gunther, a website. It's called dailylit.com. And he wrote to us and said he saw this week, and he's going to try it out with a book on creative entrepreneurs. The book selection is pretty slim, he says, but the concept is a very cool idea. So you select a book, and you get an email each day with a snip of that book, perhaps a half a chapter or whatever, a short amount of the book, so that over time you're reading a book, it's delivered to you the way you're used to getting a lot of information, and that's via email, or you can choose to get it via RSS. And you can actually control whether you want to get it every day of the week, just on weekdays, perhaps on something like Monday, Wednesday, Friday only. You set the time frame, and you get to read a book in little bites like that, bite-sized snippets. So interesting concept. That might be the way to improve those deep reading and focusing skills.
Yep, I sense a theme here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, and I don't believe I have screens to share for these other two. I don't know if you're able to bring them up, Martin, but I will mention that Gail Potratz, who's at Emmanuel in New London, shared a link called Excellent Video Tutorials for Learning About Copyright and Common Sense. And I think that especially for teachers and students, this is a very important lesson that we need to make part of our digital literacy for our students so that they're aware of proper copyright practices and things. I just read a blog post, I think from Sylvia Tolisano, and she was saying just because you attribute an image doesn't mean you're able to use it. You really need to look at the copyright for a particular image and ensure that, you know, you can't just go grab things. And she sees students making those kind of mistakes. So this is a whole series of videos, and I think would be beneficial for teachers to preview and perhaps use with their students.
Cool.
And then finally, just to mention that, unfortunately, the Concordia Self-Study Bible, published by Concordia Publishing House, in the NIV 84 format, is going out of print. So they've issued their kind of last call statements that if you want a copy of the Concordia Self-Study Bible, now's the time for you to purchase it. It won't be available any longer. And you can certainly purchase that directly from Concordia Publishing House, but we'll have a link in the show notes where you can purchase it from Northwestern Publishing House as well. You know, in my family, that's always been the traditional confirmation gift, a really nice study Bible for our sons as they hit confirmation age. And we all have the NIV 84, except my youngest son. So I'm thinking I'll go ahead and pre-purchase a copy for him just so that we all have the same consistent study Bible, at least as a starting point for him. He certainly can make other selections in the future, but I think it's time to pay attention to this last call. And if you want a copy of it for someone special, then go ahead and make that purchase now.
Yep, we've been in denial long enough. Now is the time.
So that's going to do it for community feedback for this week, Martin.
Great. Thank you, Sally. Next week, speaking of books, we return to our review of the book, The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. Chapter 5 we're on, if you're following along at home, A Medium of the Most General Nature. So pick up a copy, grab one on the Kindle, whatever. Do some reading, and that's part of the point of the book, too. So I've been enjoying the read so far, Sally, and hopefully we will expand our brains and understanding of how they work in the process.
Yep, I'm learning a lot, for sure.
Our music giveaway, our music download of the week is from Timothy Mokey, one of our instrumentalists in the Wells Tech artist pool. He is a trumpet player, and very fittingly, we've chosen a song that is very appropriate for the Reformation season, A Mighty Fortress. So go to the show notes page, click on the, I assume it's a bit.ly link, Sally.
It is, actually.
That will give you a opportunity to download the MP3 to your computer, put it on your device, use it however you like. Our artists have given us their permission and given you their permission to play their music to your heart's content.
It's only available for a week, though, so get over there quickly and download that link.
Very good. Sally, that's going to about do it. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to getting together next week and doing it one more time. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week.